All right. So welcome, Ryan. Thanks for joining me today. And welcome, everyone, to the GovIT podcast. My name is Julian, and I'm your host.
And I'm Ryan. And today we got something that's on everyone's mind if you're in the government IT space. That's the federal IPv6 mandate.
So, Ryan, what's the big deal with this IPv6 mandate? Can you tell me a little bit more about it?
Yeah, Julian. So the federal IPv6 mandate aims to push all federal agencies to adopt IPv6. It's a crucial move as the number of available IPv4 addresses are quickly running out. So IPv6 offers a much larger address space and some improved features.
Okay. So why is IPv6 such a big deal, and why do we need to transition to away from IPv4?
IPv6 solves a host of issues, Julian. You know, the most pressing of which is the address exhaustion problem, which the explosion of devices on the internet, IPv4 addresses are running out, where IPv6 offers a vastly larger address pool.
And I imagine, as is always the case with federal mandates and regulations, there are a lot of requirements involved.
Yes. So, according to the Federal Acquisitions Regulation, or known as FAR, all future acquisitions of networked information technology, must include IPv6 requirements. This means hardware, software, and even services, must be capable of running on IPv6 only environments.
So what if an agency has a compelling reason not to switch? Are there any exceptions to the rule, or does everyone have to make this transition?
Agency CIOs, can waive the requirement on a case-by-case basis. But they will have to have, explicit plans to incorporate IPv6 in the future.
And so how does this affect, hardware and software vendors? Do they have to make, significant changes to their products? I would imagine they do, right?
Yeah. So vendors, they must have their products, be IPv6 compliant. They have to document the compliance as part of their proposal to the government.
Let's dive into, one of the things that we talk about with pretty much all, especially with regulations, but any kind of, transitioning to new technology, what's the process look like? How do you prepare for this?
Yeah. Well, so the first, step I'd kind of recommend is to really establish the steering committee. It includes the network engineer, the security experts, the application developers, and other stakeholders really kind of oversee the transition. Now, then you're going to conduct a network and security audit, identify all the hardware and software that are already IPv6 compliant. You need to complete a risk assessment to really identify potential vulnerabilities. Then at that point, you can then start your planning of the new IPv6 addressing scheme. Then comes the fun part, enabling IPv6 across the network. Majority of the clients we work with are looking to do dual stack configuration. You also need to kind of set up DNS, redundancy, DHCP queries. So you'd have IPv4 and IPv6 on the DNS and DHCP side.
So does that mean, when we talked about Wi-Fi 6, Wi-Fi 6E, for example, there's the transition mode that's available so that, people have an opportunity to sort of migrate without having to change everything overnight. Is there something like that in place for the transition from IP4 to IPv6?
Yeah, that's the dual stack configuration. So you basically running your network in IPv4 mode and IPv6 mode. As you transition, endpoints, devices, network portions, you'll be running both. And then you try to really kind of isolate to the IPv6 version as you migrate.
So as is the case with any new technology that we talk about, and particularly, migrating from one to another, there are some primary concerns that we always go over, such as, cost and performance and security. Can you tell me what the security landscape looks like for this?
Oh, absolutely. So, Julian, you got to really kind of pay attention to your ACLs, your firewalls. If you're running like Cisco security compliance as ICE or DNA, all should be, configured to handle IPv6 and facilitate the rules and the traffic, of the IPv6 portion of it, and including authentication, automation you got to work through. So a lot of flows you got to deal with. Also, you need to make sure that all of the security systems across the board, VPNs or your intrusion detection systems, they all need to be IPv6 capable.
So can you give us a practical example, such as you know, what it might look like to integrate IPv6 into an existing IPv4 voice network, for example?
Sure. So like if you're looking at maybe a Cisco environment, you know, Cisco throughout, still start with assessing the current hardware and software and kind of looking at, you know, making sure that you've got everything updated to support IPv6. You know, once you're sorted out on that piece, then you'll start the dual stack configuration, really on your core routers, your switches, and your security appliances, so everything can flow through, you know, including your voice applications, you know, call manager servers, your endpoints, your phones, etc. You know, then you look to update your DNS, DHCP settings, test everything out within a setup, and then finally look and kind of roll that out and monitoring traffic to make sure everything is flowing nice and smooth.
Okay. And sort of as an extension to the practical example question, let's say that you're an IT administrator working at a federal agency. Is there a checklist, you know, that should maybe be followed to make sure that you're, you know, in compliance and going to meet, you know, the regulations properly?
Yeah. You know, you're going to start with kind of the assessment and inventory piece. So multiple checklists within that portion right there, you know, going through all the hardware and software checks, move to the actual configuration checks, including all the security aspects. You know, finally perform the series of tests before the rollouts. You know, it is a rigorous process, you know, and really necessary to make it a smooth transition. You know, we will be producing some white papers and some checklist guides that everyone will have access to on our website, and that will kind of really help you smooth and assist with your IPv6 transition.
So, you know, besides the federal mandate, what other reasons might, you know, an agency or an organization have for wanting to switch from IPv4 to IPv6?
Because internally, you're typically using non-public IPs. You know, you can scale that out, no problem. But it really comes down to like adding sensors that talk to the internet, you know, moving all stuff to the cloud, things that might actually use public IP addressing within your network that may not exist today, but will exist in the future. So it's really kind of just controlling the growth of the IPv4 and putting something in place that, you know, future proofs everything.
So we talked earlier about dual stack configurations and you know, that basically allowing sort of a transition phase from IPv4 to V6 and allowing those two to coexist. Can you tell me a little bit about how IP address allocations are going to work with this new environment?
So like in the, you know, dual stack configuration, you know, you're going to still have run both DHCP services. So you'll have IPv4 and IPv6 addresses. And, you know, this way you can kind of manage both sets of addresses effectively. So in a way, you're kind of running dual networks address-wise across the board.
Right.
So you can migrate, you know, as you see fit.
And, you know, from the sounds of it, as so many other things that we've talked about in the past, I'm sure that there will be a lot of, you know, hurdles and challenges that will have to be overcome. Can you tell me what some of the commonly faced issues you think will be?
Well, you know, the most common issue that I see is really kind of the lack of experience within understanding IPv6 and the expertise that goes with that. You know, 'cause you're moving from an address space of 32 bits to 128 bits. So just being able to keep that math in mind and how that the addresses are allocated, compatibility issues, just from the lack of not completing, you know, detailed assessments and inventory correctly, you know, kind of moving into an IPv6 environment, you know, it is more complex because it does have a lot, you know, longer addresses. It takes a, you know, good bit of time to kind of accomplish the transition and to really have realistic expectations. You know, how long will it actually take to do a full transition? You know, that's why the good thing of having the dual stack set up in there.
With all transitions and migrations that take place in, you know, in the IT realm, there are a lot of things that could be encountered along the way that maybe if you have a test environment or a staging environment could be identified and dealt with ahead of time. Is there an opportunity for that with this migration and how that it might, you know, how that might impact timelines and budgets?
Yeah, I really recommend having a realistic test environment for the migration and be able to implement IPv6 and those common mistakes that you're going to kind of go through the transition are very common. So, you know, really having the budget is a key factor for success when it comes down to, you know, rectifying all the compatibility issues that might pop up, especially with legacy you know, hardware, software, applications, whatever it might be.
So thanks, Ryan, for all this very useful information on the migration from IPv4 to V6. And I think maybe it's a good idea for us to come back with another episode where we can talk specifically about preparation and planning and offer maybe a checklist that people can use to assess their process and make sure that they're handling everything properly and meeting the regulations.
Yeah, that sounds good. Looking forward to it, and we'll see you guys next time.
Excellent. Thanks, Ryan. Thanks, everybody, for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe, and hit the notification bell so that you stay updated when we have new episodes coming out, and share this content with anyone that you think would benefit from it.